irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Are you ever? We are. We are.
I'm Michael Sterling. Who are you?
I am not Michael Sterling. I only wish I was.
You could be a reasonable facsimile, don't you?
No, not with my hair. You got that great jet black hair, and I look like B. Arthur.
Oh, my.
Don't worry. B. Arthur, one of the less known songs.
Can you hand me that paper that you were looking at?
What? You didn't get it?
Yeah, it's mine. I had given it to you.
Oh, I see.
Earlier there.
How are you?
I'm good.
It's good to see you.
Yeah, a little...
I love this day.
Why?
Because it's almost autumnal. For Los Angeles, it's autumnal. Wouldn't you call it that?
I would say
70 degrees, little moisture.
Yeah, it's
in
a
air.
Questions
get harder as we continue,
yeah,
Michael.
No, it's a little oppressive, I think.
Oppressive, really?
Yeah, I think so.
Because there's dampness in the air?
Yeah, I don't like that.
You prefer a clear day because on a clear day.
You can see forever.
And there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot.
Too much musical theater.
Thank our sponsors, Michael, would you?
I will be happy to. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And, you know, I want to tell everybody that the new chamber ensemble component of the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles will debut in a special evening titled Heartstrings, a one-night-only musical event. The piece pays homage to the life of Tyler Clemente. Well-strung and all-male, multi-talented string quartet, our special guests for this unforgettable concert. Join the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles for a musical message of hope and dignity for LGBT youth and their families. This first congressional, the performance will be presented February 28th at the First Congressional Church of Los Angeles. And joining us in studio today, please welcome the executive of the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles, the executive director, Mr. Chris Verdugo.
Hello, sir.
Hello. Thank you, Michael and Paul.
Thanks
for coming. Absolutely.
Yeah. Glad to have you.
Just a quick correction there. It's First Congregational Church.
What did I say?
Congressional. I mean, I'm sure there's one of those, too.
They never have you there.
Yeah. I don't know. It depends on the house.
Yeah. Good point.
First Congregational Church of Los Angeles, February 28th.
That's our home. And we love it there.
And we'll throw that information out a number of times before the hour.
We will.
Also, how far would you go to create a family? Reborning. Is that correct? Reborning?
That's correct.
Reborning is a darkly funny psychological thriller that takes an unsettling look at work, motherhood, and the power of healing. In Reborning, a young artist who crafts custom-made dolls begins to suspect something about a rather demanding client. As she tries to unravel the mystery, she discovers the path to her own reborning. Playing the role of Kelly in that production, please welcome Joanna Strapp is with us.
Yeah.
Welcome.
A round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you guys for showing up.
We're so grateful to have both of
us today. We appreciate that.
I think we found our next Gay Men's Chorus show.
Oh, my gosh.
Reborning the musical.
Reborning
the
musical.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
I tell you. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to talk about both things because one is a great cause and one is a wonderfully odd sort of creepy
creepy
thing.
It's a bit creepy.
But, you know, that's what choral music is like.
No. Anyway. It's going to be one of those days.
No. Sorry.
Hold on to your pearls.
Wait with my rim shot there. Hold on to your pearls.
Yeah.
Well, before we talk to these two lovely guests that we have here, Michael, how was your week before
I
we get there?
Super busy and... as always, LA's Next Great Stage Star, the only musical theater competition of its kind going on at My Supper Club, Sterling's upstairs at the Federal. Have you been?
Yes.
You have been?
I have been.
What did you come to see?
Oh God, I don't remember.
Yeah?
I think it was a music group that you had playing.
Possible?
The name will come.
Tattoos Against Your Will. That was the play. You're there for that one?
Would be Tattoos. Never mind. I heard Irreverent in the title.
Yes, it's true. At any rate, it's at the fabulous Federal in North Hollywood in the NoHo Arts District, and this is
oldest building in the San Fernando Valley.
1926.
Yes,
in the East San Fernando
Valley. Useless shit stuck in my head, Michael.
Yeah, that's just the reason why Lancashire Boulevard exists. That
really?
Universal Studios. Yeah.
Oh wow. And the stage is on, you said the stage is where the old vault in the bank used to be.
Vault.
It's a bank building.
Yeah, it was called the Federal. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So this competition is coming into its home stretch at week 5 and on week 6. LA's Next Great Stage Start 2015 will be announced, and it is a launching pad for young, up-and-coming, talented men and women to be a part of. And they actually walk in as amateurs and walk out as professionals. Mm. They've got the panel of judges that come through this competition, as Paul knows, is the hierarchy of those who produce Broadway musical theater here in Los Angeles, and including the producers, the directors, the casting directors, the equity agents. It's amazing. About 25 of them come through. And it's a big deal. And the winner gets a big cash prize.
11 gone to Broadway now?
11 have gone to Broadway so far. Yeah.
Wow.
And the others, we have 88, I think it is now, of those who are starring in U.S. National Broadway tours and at sit-downs of Broadway musicals in Vegas and working for the Disney folks on television. And
that's fantastic.
Cruise lines all over the world, seeing the world at somebody else's expense and starring in a show at night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
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 All
good.
Yeah.
So that keeps me busy because these 20 competitors.
No, it sounds.
It's like having a new family, as any show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're emailing me night and day.
Yeah. Well, good.
But it's all good. What about you, Paul?
Been crazy. As you know, I did this short film called The Beating that we did about bullying that we did.
Had beautiful film.
Wonderful success with festivals last year. And we just went online with it a couple of days ago. And it's doing the whole viral thing. Which is an accomplishment on an 11-minute movie, because so many times viral things are like 30 seconds or 45 seconds in real, because the collective attention span of people in this country now is sort of like a gnat with a triple frappuccino, just like no time at all. So to have someone sit for 11 minutes and actually watch something, and something that is as off-putting as this subject matter is. But I want to put the website out there for me.
Let's talk a little bit about your participation in this film, because you are not only the star of the film, but
I wrote it and co-produced it. And it was tough, jumping off the edge of the pool doing anything about bullying, because it's been, a lot of people have. But this is a very different and unsettling take. It's not just bullying. It's about mental illness. It's about vigilantism. It's about, but watch it. I'm going to give my website out because it's easier to get it there. Just paulstroli.com, last name Stroili, paulstroli.com. And they can watch it there. It links directly to the Vimeo. But, twice the... put it out Tuesday, twice the views we had on Tuesday, we had Wednesday, and already today, Thursday, we have twice the views from even yesterday. So we're seeing some exponential growth on that. So
that's where it lives.
Everything
happens. Lives
directed
online,
by Cyrus Miracore, phenomenal director here in town.
Yes,
But anyway, so that's my pitch. That could be the first time in 200 shows. Plus shows that I've put my own website out.
That's
just
true. You might be getting some strange mail now.
I do. Yeah, well, I already do. But rather than talk about us, let's talk about these two lovely people we have here.
That's a good idea.
Our first guest was introduced to the gay choral movement at the age of 18 when he joined the Gay Men's Chorus of South Florida. 3 years later, he was made artistic director of Paragon Productions, producing theatrical productions for cruise lines and hotels throughout the world. Upon moving to Los Angeles in 2003, he continued his nonprofit career with the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. He formally joined Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles as Director of Development and Marketing, and in April 2012 assumed the role of Executive Director. Please welcome Chris. Is it Verdugo?
Perfect.
Okay. Chris
what
Verdugo
else could it be?
Is Vertigo!
And you know how often I get vertigo, much more than I get Verdugo.
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure, but I assumed it was
what
Verdugo.
Are they, five?
What?
Who's saying this?
Oh,
my Lord. They live in California.
Vertigo.
I have to say, the first question I have, and if you would know about it, is there a lesbian chorus?
Oh, absolutely.
There is.
There's
only two people, and it's called the Indigo Girls, but that's not...
There are actually... let me backtrack a little bit, because there's actually... I just came from a conference in Laguna Beach of the gay and lesbian...
Which explains your tan.
No, don't say that out loud. The Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses. And we have many lesbian and female-identified choruses throughout the United States. Our counterpart, who we helped start here 16, 17 years ago, is Vox Femina.
Okay.
And they are a small ensemble of 40 women who led by Dr. Iris Levine, and they are a treasure to L.A. Some of the most beautiful female singing that I think, female choral music that you could hear.
Oh, wow.
So, yes.
Okay.
And they're wonderful.
Oh, that's good to
and
know.
We sing with them probably once every couple of years. We do a big piece with them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So this one that you're talking about is just you, is just the Gay Men's Chorus by itself. This is Heartstrings.
Correct.
This is February 28th at 8 o'clock. This is at the, it's the Congressional Church, isn't it?
Don't start with
Congressional Church. Okay. How did you, please tell our listeners about who's joining you on this and the greatest name of any sort of choral. Wellstrung, that's the name.
Wellstrung is just a fantastic string ensemble. And they also happen to sing, all four of them. They are four very handsome men, as you can see from the picture and on the website. They kind of have it all going for them. And there's a really interesting story. One of them was in P-Town and really identified with the fact that this is what he loved to do. Met someone there who was sort of an agent, said, I can make you a star if I had three more.
Yes.
So they went out and they found three more, and thus was born Wellstrung in P-Town. And they just performed with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus for their holiday shows.
Okay.
And a few other gay choruses, and they're also very connected with the Tyler Clementi Foundation. So the fact that we invited them to be part of this concert, which also celebrates the life of Tyler Clementi, the Rutgers student who committed suicide after being cyberbullied several years ago, is kind of wonderful. It's just come full circle. And they're excited, and we're excited, because they really are fantastic.
Is this their first appearance in Los Angeles?
I don't know that. Mm-hmm. I suspect
they're
it might
East
be.
East Coast based.
Yeah, they are. They're in New York. So I suspect it might be, but I'm not sure.
Let's give a listen to them.
Let's
up here on this thing the kids are playing with called the interweb.
Okay. Yeah.
Like the World Wide Net.
Hold on to your
So this is actually from the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles website, which you can go to, gmcla.org, and see the video that you're about to listen to right now. This one is called Wellstrung Mozart Meets Kelly Clarkson.
So moving on, yeah, yeah, thanks to you. chance, you blew it. Out of sight, out of mind. Shut your mouth, I just can't take it. Again and again and again and again. Since you've been gone,
that's awesome.
It's awesome. Totally awesome.
I really enjoyed that.
They look great. They sound great. They're novel. They're different. They're fresh.
And as I said, gmcla.org is where you can see this video of this this phenomenal group, Wellstrung. But, Chris, we were talking during while it was playing that this is an add-on to your existing season, right, this particular performance?
It sure is. We have three regular subscription concerts that happen in December, March, and in June. But this past season, last year, we made a conscious decision to start including a fourth show in our season, and that one would be geared toward producing more socially conscious content, which is why we're doing the Los Angeles premiere of Tyler Suite. We hope to do another piece next year, which is entitled For a Look or a Touch, and it deals with homosexuality and the Holocaust. And so there's really, we want to be able to have a show that is really more about the substance of who and what we are and really mission-based, along with our three regular concerts that happen every year, which are fun, and we can, you know, do great art and great singing and great dancing. But this one is specifically, you know, we really want to tailor it toward pieces that have a social conscience around them. We're excited to you know, launch it.
As executive director, I'm always curious about how these things are assembled. And as executive director, the decision as to what to sing, what to present, is that your decision? Is it decided by committee? Is there like a creative team? Is stuff workshopped? How does that work?
Yes to all of them, except is it decided by me? Sadly, not. I don't know. We have an amazing artistic director, Dr. Joe Netto, who came to us about a year and a half ago from the Heartland. He was with Heartland Men's Chorus, and he chose the music for this specific concert. We do have what is called a music advisory committee, which meets with Joe. They meet throughout the entire year, and they create our concerts. They also they go out and just sort of cultivate these thousands of songs that can dwindle down to like 20, 24 songs that we perform in a show. So it's a bit of both. But this particular concert between Wellstrung and Tyler Suite and the additional pieces, Joe curated the music for the show, and it is fantastic.
From a production standpoint, since you have experience in that area, do you get involved there at all? Do you have a little say-so at all?
Occasionally, I do have a say-so. And occasionally, I do, just depending on the need, really. Yeah. I mean, we do so many other things. We have, you know, we have a real robust outreach program, mm-hmm. and that takes a lot of our time and energy. But it's really mission based, and it's why we do it. It's arts through advocacy. Advocacy through arts,
right.
and that's what this is as well. So I don't get to stretch that creative muscle as much as I would like to,
right.
But that's okay. That's not why I'm here.
Well, you know, the visual of just seeing the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles on stage is something to behold. Mm-hmm. How many members?
Now we are at 262.
Wow. And they're all on that stage?
Yes, in some incarnation or another. They're either singing or dancing, but they're on that stage.
How do you go about, I mean, do you have auditions for new members? Is there a finite amount that will be, and then when someone leaves, then someone else comes in? How does that work?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it's actually something that we're grappling with at the moment. What is the right number for us? There are other choruses that are 300, 325, you know, 275. We're grappling with what's the right number for us, and it's an ongoing conversation. However, we do have auditions. We have auditions twice a year in September and in January. It's strenuous. I mean, and I actually participated in this year's auditions to a certain extent, and it's really intense, and the level of artistry that you're required to have, it's risen to a whole different bar, because about 3, 4, 5 years ago, we started to get these just very, very high caliber musicians who were coming in, and they've raised the bar, and the bar just keeps going higher and higher. And we sit back and we're like, well, we have probably the one of the courses with the best singers in this country.
Right.
You know, and that's partly because we live in Los Angeles, so we're very fortunate for that. But we've
also been able to attract them,
and a lot of them are also attracted because of our outreach and the advocacy work that we do in high schools and across the country.
Right. Well, it's always nice when you can have a piece of entertainment that, even if it were just that, would still be a pleasant evening, would still be a joyous thing to experience.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're supporting something like this, either monetarily by attending or artistically by being part of it, to know at the core of it is this mission.
Absolutely.
That you have, that was on your website, and I meant to put it in the mission statement and the goal and everything.
Yeah.
But it was very, very, very touching.
Yeah, thank you. And this one is especially near and dear to our hearts because about 3 years ago, Tyler Clementi's brother, James, we invited him out for our annual gala, and he spoke and he read the letters that he wishes that he would have written to his brother. It was very beautiful and emotional. So to be able to be welcoming him and his mother back for this evening, and there are several fundraisers that are going to be going on the 2 days before, I believe, and also the night of the concert to help the Tyler Clementi Foundation and their mission, which is to stop this sort of cyberbullying that happens, and so that Tyler's life will not have been in vain. And he was a violinist.
Wow.
An amazing violinist, walked in to Rutgers and was promoted to the first chair in like the first few months of him being there. So that's why this piece of Tyler Suite, which has, it's only written for piano and violin. And so having heartstrings, and they're going to each, I think, they're going to switch off and each play different parts of that of that particular piece. Yeah, so it's very, it's like I said, it's come full circle, and having having this particular piece with Tyler and being able to support their foundation means a lot to the organization.
Wow.
And we're hoping to really get that message out.
That's so important. It's so important right now. I don't know if I told you this, Michael, but this is something that while we're discussing this, it just occurred to me. My friends Kevin and Sarah, who live in Chicago, Kevin Tice, who's been a guest on the show, calling in from Chicago.
Yeah.
I went to college with them in upstate New York, Kevin Tice and Sarah Nichols. And their son, Milo, who just turned 15, is transgender.
Mm.
And Milo was raised as Miranda. And
you've never told me this.
Came out a couple of years ago, but has identified as transgender just recently, and went online and wrote a letter to all the kids of that age, 13, 14, 15, and posted it with every birthday that they have. They do a pancake in the shape of the year. So Milo posted all the pancakes, holding the pancakes 1 through 15, and to say that it went viral, it is
wow.
Unbelievable, the amount of kids that age, 13, 14, 15, reaching out to Milo directly, asking thank you for saying this, thank you for the support. The band Fall Out Boy, Milo was wearing their jacket, like a little jacket that had it on the side, and of course then that went to their website, so it's posted on
Fall
Out
Boy. Wonderful.
But it's a wonderful thing that happened, and so essential, especially when you hear about things like Tyler Clementi and that happening. Any opportunity for someone, especially someone that age, because people are going to listen to their peers. And
well, and kudos to his parents
for
being so supportive.
Kevin and Sarah are some of the most phenomenal people anyway, but as parents they just hit it out of the park.
He's
too wonderful,
because not all of them are.
No, they're not. Milo and their daughter, Gwenny, two wonderful kids. But you just made me think of that, so I thought
that's great. And that is, that's a wonderful story, and it's those kind of stories that we need to get out. And young people speaking to their peers, it's essential, and it's what lands home with these young people. And we're hoping to add more awareness around trans issues as well. And we actually address it in our new show, the It Gets Better show that we've done that tours the country, which I'll talk to you about another time, because that's a whole different conversation.
And once again, we'll put this information out there a couple of more times, but the show is called Heartstrings. It's February 28th at 8 p.m. This is at the First Congregational Church of Los Angeles. That is at 540 South Commonwealth Avenue in L.A. And for tickets, it is the website. Would you give the website again?
It's gmcla.org.
gmcla.org.
It's right on the homepage. You can't miss it.
It is gmcla.org.
And is there a telephone number as well?
1-800-MEN-SING.
Oh, wow.
Can't
now, how are we going to remember that?
What's Will Strong's number?
I don't know. You can ask them when you're there. On
do you
the
know
28th.
They have this whole thing about worst URLs ever? Did you see this? They had a thing on the internet about the worst URL because it seems like a good idea until you write it out as a URL. And there was a pen vendor, as a pencils and pens, and it was like a wholesale place,
right.
And it was called Pen Island, which makes perfect sense. You know, Pen Island. String those things together, www.penisland, and that's not how it reads. It reads as something else. And,
wow. Call 1-800-MEN-SING.
Anyway, Michael, before we move on and talk to Joanna and continue to talk to Chris, you were a very active theater goer this week.
Well,
were you not?
To an extent, yes. I went to the opening last night of Dame Edna Everage, a grand goodbye, the farewell tour. And, of course, Dame Edna is actually a man, Barry Humphries.
Yeah, Barry Humphries,
this
yes.
character back in Australia. As it started off as just a plain housewife that went to becoming, by her own invention and terminology, a megastar, and now a gigastar.
A gigastar.
A gigastar.
Yes.
And I want to say...
her own definition? Is that
yes,
what she
exactly,
says?
Exactly.
She's
exactly.
a gigastar.
And there is an interesting, very interesting relationship between Barry Humphries and Dame Edna, which is something else. It's a whole thing that sits over here on the other side of it. And I was there on behalf of Broadway World Television on the red carpet doing celebrity interviews, so I talked to a lot of people like... Michael Feinstein and Barry Bostwick and Gene Kelly's wife, Patricia Kelly, everyone coming to support Dame Edna, which was nobody's first time seeing her. They're like there at every single outing.
Quite the following, yeah.
Absolutely. And when you stop and think of it, as I said to Chris earlier before we went on the air, Barry has got to be in his 70s, at least his early 70s. I've never seen anyone... so on top of their game of wit and humor and and spontaneity with the audience, because that's what the show is all about. It's a conversation with the audience.
Yeah.
He pulls people in individually, never forgets their name during the course of that 2.5 hours. There'll be like maybe 6 people up front on a first name basis. He pulls so much information out of them, from how clean their house is, to what color the walls are, to what they're sadly that he's depressed to see them dressed the way they are here. You know, it's anything and everything. People just sit there kind of like holding on to the arms of their chair because they don't know what's going to happen next. And then he actually married 2 people last night.
Really?
Wow.
On the stage, yes. In fun, in jest. And the payoff on that was these 2 people. One was a black gentleman and the other a very diminutive Caucasian young woman who was not married. They didn't. We did not know this until they got onto the stage, nor did Barry. But it didn't make any difference because it was all in good fun. But after the official ceremony, which there was a big production around it, he said, "So, do you have any? Have you ever had any children?" To the woman, and she said, "Well, I do. I have a 17-year-old son, or a 21-year-old son." And he said, "And where does he live? Let's call him and tell him of this fabulous news."
Wow!
So, this was about 9:45 into the show, and they called, and his girlfriend answered the phone, and they were asleep. And she would, hello.
At 9:45?
Yeah. The mother said, they go to bed early. And Dame Edna talked to the son and he had no idea who he was talking to.
Oh,
put the mother on. And it became this big conversation, which lasted for about 2 or 3 very hilarious
minutes. You're jumping off the edge of the pool as a performer when you're on stage at the Amundsen, and you take a risk like that. You got to have cojones of steel.
Exactly. But you know what? He's so clever. I'm sure it has happened when the phone has not been answered, yeah. and he'll figure it out.
See, that's just it. When you're as gifted improvisationally as Barry Humphries is, you can sometimes get more fodder out of a phone call that's not answered.
Right.
You know, just because he's got probably a dozen contingencies in his
head. Picked on all the seniors in the audience.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Had them stand up and just, you know, in the best of, you know, the worst taste in the best intentions.
It would be wonderful to see two of his performances side by side just to see how much they vary.
The closing kind of icing on the cake last night was he talks about having a garden in Australia of gladiolas, which he grows, and that he's had them flown in from Australia for the evening. As he just mentioned this up front, at the very end of the evening, all of the ushers in the theater come into the theater, and he's singing on stage, and there's a big production number going on, and every single person in the house, upstairs, downstairs, so we're talking, 1,600 people, get a gladiolus that is 3 feet tall. And everybody gets brought into the production number.
Wow.
Waving the thing. He gives instructions on what to do with it while he's singing. And it is the way the show closes.
And you think that's not an opening night thing? You think that's an every night thing?
No, it is an every night thing to some extent, but not with every person in the audience receiving a gladiola. And then he comes out at the very end. There's a little break where you know, the audience is giving him a standing ovation, which he insists they do give him at the beginning of the show. He comes out, though, as himself.
Oh, he does?
At the end, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Very, very
cool. To see what a complete transformation is.
Exactly.
Because he's just like an old British guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah?
Yeah. Australian.
Australia. Well, then a prisoner.
So, you know.
Isn't that Allison, what it is if you're Australian and British?
At the Allison Theater, ladies and gentlemen, go to centertheatergroup.org for tickets, and it'll be there for another week. And I assure you that you will have the time of your life.
There you go.
All right. Michael, would you give this lovely lady to my right the intro she is so aptly due?
I will indeed. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, has appeared at North Coast Rep, The Rubicon, in Noises Off, for which she received a 2014 Broadway World Award nomination as Best Featured Actress, the Laguna Playhouse, and the world premiere of The Pursuit of Happiness. She is a proud member of the Antaeus Theater Company, where she has performed in The Seagull, The Liar, and Peace in Our Time, among others. Today we're talking about, however, her co-starring role in the critically acclaimed hit play Reborning, now on stage at Hollywood's Fountain Theater. Please welcome Joanna Strapp.
How are you?
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. You look familiar to me. Seriously. Do I?
She's on this postcard that's on the table.
Well, no. I feel we've met each other. Perhaps we have.
It's very possible.
Yeah? I'm not talking about another life or anything like that. This one.
Don't go all McLean on us.
You know what? When I first walked in the door today, I went, whoa.
Well, so did I, but she's very striking. That's part of it,
yes,
too.
Yes, well,
she's
that's
very attractive.
Always, yeah.
So, Joanna, tell us, we were talking in the lobby about this, and this show, I'm dying to see it because it's so up my alley in terms of the slightly creepy aspect to it. Can you give a little synopsis for the listeners without giving anything away?
Yeah, well, I'll do my best. It is a slightly creepy play, but it's a dark comedy and dramedy. Maybe there's definitely some dramatic elements. It's written by Zaid Dorn, who's a Chicago-based playwright, and he actually has an interesting life story. I don't know if you know about him.
No.
His parents were leaders of the Weather Underground.
Oh, wow.
And so he lived the first 6 years of his life underground, like running from the government. So he's got a really interesting life story.
Wow.
Anyway, this play is about reborning, which is a real thing. And it's when people make these dolls that look exactly like real babies. To the point where police have broken into cars when they see one in the front seat because they think it's a suffocating infant or...
You were saying something about that someone was going through a drive-through.
I had the opportunity to meet the artist who made the dolls for our show. Her name's Amy Carrich. She's based in just outside Laguna Beach, and so I went down there to see her studio and talked to her about it. And thankfully, she's a very normal, balanced woman, unlike the character I'm playing. But she told me that she was at this doll convention, and an artist friend of hers was driving back and had one of the dolls on the front seat, the passenger seat of her car, went through a drive-through. By the time she got back to her house, the police were waiting in her driveway because the drive-thru attendant had called in her license plate saying there's an unrestrained infant.
Yeah, this woman's got a baby right in the front seat. Yeah,
they look so real. And we have some of them in the show, and even I expect them to start blinking. blinking or looking at me, or, you know, they're terrifyingly real. Beautifully real, I guess I should say, depending on how you look at it.
Terrifying or beautiful, depending on if you like. You know, do you like kits, John?
But it's just,
we just stumbled on something there. They look just like babies. They're terrifying.
But yeah, people, there's a very serious collecting community. You know, people collect them for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes it's because they've lost a child, and that's sort of the premise of this play, is this woman is commissioning this doll to be made that looks like her baby who passed away 20 years ago. And the artists use photographs, and, you know, they really zoom in and get all the pixels and make them very, very true to life. So, yeah, it's
really interesting. How do you personally feel about that? About people doing that?
Can you be objective now? I mean,
I don't want to offend anyone.
Well, no, but I mean, I do think it's creepy. I think it's interesting, totally interesting, and I would so love to see this play. I actually
would. It is. It's so fascinating.
But I mean, I think it's creepy too. But the thing is, where do you draw the line? How is it different from a portrait? How is it different from it's a sculpture? It's and people have paintings of their children.
Same as, and I don't mean to belittle this at all, but it's for people who are, you know, invested in their pets, and once they pass, they go to that same kind of extent, and that's creepy, I think.
Is it because the 3D actualization of it?
Well, yeah. I mean, do you really need that? Can you supplement, you know, your memories through getting another pet?
Well, it's very awkward at the dog park, I'll tell you that. It's very awkward at the dog park because, you know, the other dogs come up and the one just stands there. It throws them a bit.
Sorry.
So sorry.
That's terrible.
I'm so sorry. Well, I apologize for that.
But, you know, I mean, it's like people who lose someone and also then, you know, build an altar in their house with their photographs and they're this and they're that and don't leave the house for years upon.
Yeah, and a lot of people do.
I actually know someone like that.
Whether or not they have this doll commissioned to look like their child who's passed, a lot of them treat these dolls like real babies.
Yeah.
Take them to the mall and wheel them around in strollers. And there's a documentary that we watched. Go ahead.
No, that's the creepy part.
Yeah, you know,
that's where creepy really creeps
in. Imbuing it with human characteristics.
Yes.
It's one thing to have it sort of displayed in your own little universe of your home.
Right.
But the minute you go out the door with it, you know, that's when it gets a little...
I tend to agree with you.
Did you know anything about this before this show, that this whole...
I didn't. In fact, when I first read this play, I thought that the playwright was such a genius because he came up with this crazy idea. I thought it was just so creative. And then I started Googling. I was like, wait.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very real. One of the first days of rehearsal, we watched this documentary called My Fake Baby, which kind of follows some of these women, particularly in Britain, who are commissioning dolls to be made. And they... I mean, you really see up close and personal how invested they become. This one woman was going to Harrods, spending, you know, 300, 500 pounds on clothes and strollers. And she says, with all seriousness, it's a great use of money because it's not going to get dirty. Like, the clothes. You're like, wait. She flew to America to pick up her, you know, adopt her, her doll.
Yeah.
It's just, people take it very seriously.
What's the name of that documentary?
My Fake Baby.
Oh,
I believe
okay.
You can see it all on YouTube.
That's actually one of the lesser known Cary Grant movies. Bringing up My Fake Baby.
But are the babies random babies? Are you talking about with this woman?
One of them was commissioned that they followed in the documentary. Another woman had like three or four of them, and they weren't. She didn't, or she commissioned them, but not to look like a specific person who had died or anything.
Well,
just
then
because
that's
she
even,
wanted. That's I remember even. Her saying like, "I'm getting an open-eyed smiler."
Oh,
and that was the pinnacle of her collection.
That's like the term.
So it's very. It's a very.
I'm going for the open. I think I'm going to go for the open-eyed smile.
But the artist. I have to just emphasize, like, this woman, Amy, who made our dolls, they're really, really skilled artists.
Oh, I'm sure. It's astounding.
Yeah, it's truly amazing.
Well, but that's not the point. You know, the artistry is, you know, can speak for itself. It's just what motivates it. Right.
Oh, I am so. But
I think there's a big difference too between the collectors and the artists. That's one thing that she made sure to emphasize.
Imagine she does it for other things. I mean, for film production, I would assume that
perhaps,
things like that.
Yeah.
Well, she should if she's going. You know, she's going to do that.
I think she told me actually she started because her young daughter wanted one of these dolls when she was, you know, like in fifth grade or something like that.
Right.
And rather than spending $5,000-$6,000 on the doll, she's like, I'm just going to learn to make it, and then it just. you know, it kind of escalated from there.
Are they articulated? I mean, do the arms and legs move, or is it just like a solid sculpture?
Oh, no,
or?
They move, and they're stuffed and weighted. They're really particularly weighted. So,
oh,
like,
wow.
There are BB gun pellets in the body, I think, but in little pouches to make them more specific.
Holy
and
cow.
Then there's, like, little glass beads in the arms. I mean, everything.
Wow.
It's so, so detailed.
Wow. I got to see one of these things. I want to see the show, but I also want to see one of these babies.
And the ones that you have in the show?
Well, yes, this woman, Amy, made two for the show. We have a couple of others that are just filler on the shelves because we couldn't afford to buy that many real reborn dolls.
You just try to tuck the Cabbage Patch ones in there.
Yeah,
and hope no one notices.
We kind of like put a hat on it.
So they're called reborn dolls?
Yes, yes.
Wow.
The show is called the Reborn Dolls. The show is called Reborning. This is playing at the Fountain Theater, 5060 Fountain Avenue in Los Angeles. And for tickets, 323-663-1525 or fountaintheater.com. And theater has the R-E spelling, fountaintheater.com. Joanna, did you, as an actor and as a creative person, was it off-putting to you to be in the head of this person for so long, or you mentioned something about the artist who actually did the dolls is a little more adjusted than your character.
Well, yes, my character is definitely not very stable.
Okay.
And there's also, as revealed in the play, some childhood trauma and things like that. So,
okay. Yeah,
it's been challenging for sure. It's pretty dark. It gets pretty dark at the end. I usually have a couple of beers after rehearsal just to let it go.
Well, they're not real beers. They're just little sculpted
beers. Re-beering.
I'm sorry. I'm late on this one, but I have to.
What do audience members have to say about it? Do you come out and greet the audience at the end to say hello to people as they're leaving?
Well, we just opened last weekend, but I had a couple of friends come to previews, and they were just kind of staring at me wide-eyed. They were like, "Wow, that was really it's an 80-minute play, and it just goes from 0 to 60.
No intermission, I'm
saying? No intermission.
Yeah.
So I think it's shocking, and I think hopefully in a good way. I mean, we got a great review in the LA Times. Thank you, Kathleen Foley.
I want to actually share a quote from that review right here. Strap's performance is a real heartstopper that leaves us emotionally wrecked in its aftermath. And it's not only a great review in LA Times, but also Critics' Choice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I actually auditioned for the baby in that movie.
Really?
I did, yeah.
What happened?
It just didn't work out.
I wanted to reject it.
That's my show. Rejecting. Rejecting. Yes.
Wow. Oh, my. This is so fascinating, really.
Yeah. I also just want to give a shout out to Kristen Carey and Ryan Doucette, who are my great castmates, and Simon Levy, who directed the show. It's been a really great experience.
How did you start as an actress? Let's go back to your own career.
I come from Boston, and nobody in my family is really in the arts. So I think for me, actually, it started when I was a kid watching movies, and I remember watching The Sound of Music and being enthralled and just believing that I wanted to be a nun at first, because I thought that's what was going on. I thought nuns would sing and dance, and they were performers. And then, this is when I was 3 or 4 years old, and then somebody explained to me that Julie Andrews is actually an actress, not a nun. So, I don't know, that's where my love of it started. And then I started doing plays in middle school. I went to an all-girls school, and we did a lot of Shakespeare, so I played Macbeth in 10th grade.
Oh, my gosh.
How was he? How were you?
Oh, I'm sure I was brilliant.
So similar to my story, though, with Julie Andrews, because I didn't want to be a nun. Sorry, go on.
No, please.
I thought I had something there, and I just totally, the Sound of Music. I was going to say, I didn't want to be a nun. I wanted to be a Nazi, but it just didn't work out. It wasn't funny, and I committed to it, and then halfway through, I realized I had to abandon it. I can't deceive people.
And
I had
you
to
know
let
how many Nazi people we have listening to this
yes,
show.
Well, we don't want to offend any, you know, how desperate are we for listeners on this show, really?
Really.
So, anyway, sorry.
No, it's okay. Anyway, that's when I started doing plays, and then I studied acting in college. I went to Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, which was a fantastic education.
Oh, really?
Did you study musical theater then?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
I'm not much of a singer, although I'd like to be.
Jennifer Nicol attended Carnegie Mellon.
Do you know her?
Yes, that name is so familiar. Jennifer May Nicol.
Yeah, Jennifer May Nicol. Yes,
wow.
She, the film I was talking about, she's a brilliant costume designer, and she did the costumes for The Beating,
that's
the short
fantastic.
Film. Yeah, she's wonderful.
What a small
wonderful
world.
Yeah. Wonderful. It does.
What are the chances of that?
I know.
Asking somebody if they...
I know. Especially Carnegie Mellon.
Yeah, exactly.
University.
So it was in your blood from the beginning, right?
Well, I don't...
Well,
sure.
I mean, you were...
I've always wanted to be an actor, so I feel really lucky to just be able to still be doing it, you know.
Well, and you're especially obviously very good time. At it. If the LA, with the, given what the LA Times said, I am so all over seeing this show.
I know.
I know we're audio now, and I'm waving this vehemently. I'm waving the postcard like anyone can see me.
Well, how can people see that image?
I'm assuming from the website for the show. I'm sure they have the. Is this the poster, or did they do custom ones for the individual performers? Because
they didn't. That's what all the postcards look like. But the poster just looks like this image on the back, which is just the head of the. The baby.
Oh.
Just a baby head.
Not disturbing at all.
Okay. Yeah, it's just, what do you want to see? I want to see either a musical or that play with the disembodied baby head. One or the other. Not exactly sure which
we'll
way
have dinner before.
Yes, yes. The show is reborning. It's at the Fountain Theater that's just open, January 24th, playing through March 15th, Thursdays through Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 2, 323-663-1525. Michael, do you have the information for the Gay Men's Chorus?
I do indeed, of course, and that what we were talking about, Heartstrings, this very special event being presented by the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles. Is coming up on February 28th. And for tickets to that, you simply go to the website gmcla.org or the telephone number 800-MEN-SING. And you can get tickets that way as well. But you heard what these young men sounded like, Heartstrings, and it's pretty awesome. So you cannot go wrong with that. It's a one-night only event. So remember that February 28th, coming up pretty quickly at the First Congregational Church of Los Angeles.
Yes. Both.
So it's come to that time now.
It is that time, folks. It's that time. We're going to ask you to share a mishap, a embarrassment, something that took place on stage that wasn't supposed to. Chris, can we start with you? We got a little...
Sure. So this didn't happen under my tenure at the Gay Men's Chorus, but I was told a story just recently, actually. There was a holiday show. I think it might have been called Holidays LA or LA Holidays or Hollywood something. I don't recall the name. But regardless, the stage had a Hollywood sign hanging on the proscenium above the pit, right? So, and it was fashioned to look like the Hollywood sign. So at some point during the performance, the O of the Hollywood just came falling down and it fell on top of the cellist. So the cellist was fine. The cello not so good.
Wow.
And no cello for the rest of the show.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of
awful.
So it
was the Hollywood, what was the Hollywood land? And just
and the O just... Oh.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a bit of a disaster in the middle of a show.
Oh, man. Before we ask Joanna for her tale, I have a story. And, Michael, you're not going to like it because it doesn't have the best language in it, but it's worth it for the story.
Now, I'm not prudish, so, you know, please give me that. It's just that we have a rating.
Mickey Rooney. Mickey Rooney. God rest his soul, Mickey Rooney. But anyone who spoke to Mickey Rooney, as I did in the later years of his life, knew that Mickey was... half a bubble off plum. He was a little bit off and a very, very bitter man. He was being interviewed for something in Chicago, and some WGN interviewer reporter put a microphone in his face, and he said, "Well, Mr. Rooney, you've been in Hollywood longer than the Hollywood sign, you know." And Mickey Rooney said, "Well, you know why it says Hollywood up on the hill, don't you?" And this poor reporter's like, "No." And Mickey Rooney's like, "Well, because dirty, rotten, backstabbing motherfuckerville didn't fit." It's like, oh, a little bitter there, are you, Mixer?
Wow.
Just love it. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Not a great one? Yeah. Okay, Joanna, what happened to you?
Oh, gosh. There's a couple things I could talk about. I was doing Steel Magnolias down at the Laguna Playhouse last summer.
Yes.
And this is just the scariest moment I've had on stage. But it was early in the play. We're all in the hair salon. And the way that the backstory and the exposition gets revealed is through all these questions about Shelby's wedding, if you're familiar.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And some of the... Thank you.
He's actually performing scenes to it off to the side.
It's not Pink and Pink. It's Blush and Bashful.
Exactly. But the questions come in a certain order that reveal right. all these things about like Jackson, her fiance, and like the fact that she has diabetes. Anyway, the questions kind of got skipped. We're out of order. So all of a sudden, we're kind of at the end of the scene, and nobody had talked about Shelby having diabetes. Nobody had talked about any of that really important information you need to know for the rest of the play. So thankfully, my co-star Elise Merteau, who was playing Malin, started just talking, just like trying to fill in the story, which was brilliant. I didn't know what to do. I was playing Annelle, so I just kept doing hair, like hoping that it was going to get figured out. But
because she
it was
has
terrifying.
She has a seizure, right? Doesn't
yes,
she?
Yes, she Shelby. Spoiler alert.
Drink
Shelby,
your juice.
Yeah.
Right. She goes.
Shelby
to
dies from complications with diabetes, right. So it's like kind of important that you know that in the beginning of the play.
Wow.
But that was one of those scariest moments. But I was so proud of everybody, not myself, but everybody else for like
just filling in the gaps. Yeah,
out. Yeah, it was great.
That's what you get when you get generous actors who know. Because you know, right. something gets overlooked, and then they just wow.
Should I tell my story? Do I have time?
You got 2 minutes.
This happened to me. I've actually told it on the show before, but people love to hear it. When I was a kid, you know, I was an actor in musical theater, and at that particular time, it was the rage of in theaters here in California and across the country to be in the round. So a lot of proscenium theaters would adjust themselves to create that ambiance. And I was appearing in Bye Bye Birdie with Dick Van Dyke and at the Santa Monica Auditorium here in Santa Monica, which used to host the Oscars and so forth. And it was converted to Theater in the Round. And at the beginning, have you ever seen the show, Bye Bye Birdie?
Of course.
Oh, so you know that there's a transition from New York to Sweet Apple, Ohio. Mm-hmm. It's the same kids, but you're dressed as New Yorkers, and then you are transferred to Sweet Apple, Ohio as Ohio teenagers, welcoming, you know, Conrad Birdie coming into town. So that transition was directed as such that everything happened. We underdressed and with the Sweet Apple clothes and you know, had the New York garb on at the beginning of the scene. And then the transition happened with a strobe light. And dressers would come, you know, up the aisles in that strobe, because it would be hard to see, to assist and take clothes that were being taken off and take them off stage. So when the lights came up, everyone was in Sweet Apple, Ohio, including myself. And I had a red sweater on and a shirt similar to the one I'm wearing today with a button-down shirt. And we're all waving flags. And I felt cold is what I felt. And I looked down at myself, and I was standing there in my dance belt. In front of 3,000 people.
Sweet apples! Wow.
Wow.
So whoever sat
one.
On that side of the theater certainly got their money's worth.
Yeah.
I was like mortified. I was frozen in just fear.
Oh, that's
did you just run off?
I had to. Yeah, of course.
Bye-bye, Birdie. All right. We got to go. What a pleasure having both of you on. Chris, Joanna. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Michael, I can't hear that story enough.
Thank you, Paul.
And we'll see you next week.
See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.